It's happening again. Welcome to Work Cookie, a CBOC podcast. As we broadcast around the world, get bite-sized morsels and tidbits from our industrial organizational psychologists, other experts, and the latest research on the workplace to boost your organization's effectiveness. Sign up now at CBOC.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from our experts at CBOC.com.
Welcome, I'm Dr. Jeremy Lookabaugh, Industrial Organizational Psychology Consultant and Workplace Communication and Negotiation Coach. Also, we have Tom Bradshaw with us, a voice and speech coach and a damn good actor too. He is the official voice and speech coach for the Industrial Organizational Psychology community.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Work Cookie, our weekly gathering of IOs, HRs, recruiters, and one actor, as we try to make the world of work just a little bit better. And today, Jeremy, we have a special guest.
We do. And I mentioned 2 weeks ago on the podcast 2 weeks ago that we might have a special treat. And here we have a best-selling author with HarperCollins Leadership and the former CHRO of Nickelodeon, Paul Falcone. So Paul and I were talking yesterday, and many of you think that coincidences happen in life. So we're talking, and I couldn't have given him the most random thing. I said, Paul, I'm so excited to speak with you today. And it could only be matched if I were to have met Peter Falk, who stars as Columbo before Peter Falk died. So that's pretty random. So Paul says, you know, when I was the VP of HR at NBC Universal.
Right. Yep.
He said, when I started there, they gave me my office, and it was Peter Falk's office. So for those of you who think coincidences happen in life, I think I've got you beat. So I was just, I couldn't have been more excited. I was just, oh my gosh, it was great. So, Tom, what's our topic for today?
Well, we're going to continue our discussion. We've been going the last couple of weeks, talking about, the employee evaluation, you know, the thing that I don't like, that has never made me feel good. And you know, I feel like I walk in there and my boss is sitting there with a big stick, and you know, it's, you know, drop him and bend over and, you know, can I have another? It's never really gone well. We've talked a little bit about, you know, maybe continuous evaluation and keeping it real but positive would, you know, it helped me a lot. But you know, that's what we're talking about. And today we're going to talk about avoiding the void. Continuous performance management approaches, because, you know, my experience is they happen once a year. Neither side really enjoys the situation, you know, but it usually does not turn out well for either party. So hopefully we'll get some great advice today about how to turn that around.
I put our references for today in the chat. I'm going to speak briefly to some of the research found in two of these research articles. The other references for today are, of course, Performance Appraisal Toolkit, which we really, really honed in on two podcasts ago. And then two of the other ones, which I've had for years in my bookshelf, they're probably backwards for you, but 2,600 phrases for setting effective performance management goals and 2,600 phrases for effective performance reviews. And also, I was talking to Paul and I said, what's your best-selling book? What do people focus on most today? And Paul, I think I have it on a different screen. Can you share that book that you shared about the conversations?
Yeah, Jeremy, thanks. It's called 101 Tough Conversations to Have with Employees. And the reason why I think it sold so well is so many managers get stuck. They don't know how to open the conversation and they don't know how to kind of open that can of worms. So my goal is to kind of teach them how to do it. I don't say do it exactly this way, but, you know, make it your own and customize it. But you can pretty much map out the whole conversation only because I've been doing this for 35 years and I kind of know where they go when you open it a certain way. So that book is pretty much the one I'm most identified with these days.
And Tom, we often talk about what to say and how to say it, Tom. We even had this series we did years and years ago. So definitely a good reference there. The first reference, the article I want to touch on, just a couple of things. So we look at, there's this reference called Measurable, and these are all in the show notes and also in the chat here today. measurable and continuous performance improvement, the development of a performance measurement, management, and improvement system. And as we know, these titles are never long and never short of these extremely large words. So in general, when we look at performance management, it's defined as a set of ongoing, the key is ongoing, integrated, key is integrated, activities that move beyond isolated performance appraisals. And I have, Tom, I know you absolutely love my analogies, so I'm going to provide an analogy for that a little later on. In this particular article, they look at three different levels, strategic, tactical, and operational. And to break that down, when we're looking at this ongoing and integrated approach, strategic is the external results and consequences on the client and society. For example, we're looking at things that matter, right? Self-sufficiency, self-reliance, and also quality of life. And then we look at the tactical level. These are the results that benefit the organization itself. And we can usually see those just in terms of the financial returns. And then we look at the operational level, which is the building block results for which the organization has those individuals and also the groups and the performers are actually held accountable. So now we have strategic, tactical, and operational level. And again, it's always good to break these things down. We talk all the time about how we can take just one golden nugget of a book or of a research article and turn that around into something that's very, very actionable, actually create an actionable plan. And that's, and I have no shame here in continuing to talk it up because I love it so much. That's where Paul Falcone's book, and we talked about this 2 weeks ago with the Performance Appraisal Toolkit, that is in stepwise format, explanation. How do you turn it in? How do you turn these things into actionable results? And it's actually a stepwise plan. So that book already does it for you. And here we're talking about with these research articles, we can easily find things. So you might look at your organization and see, what are we doing on the strategic, tactical, and operational level in terms of having an ongoing and an integrated plan? So I want to just mention before I turn it back over to you, Tom. So there is this other article called 100 Years of Progress, or it's called Performance Appraisal and Performance Management, 100 Years of Progress, ? Meaning, has it really been 100 years of progress? So here's where the analogy comes in. As these authors state, it's often been assumed that improving an individual performance would just by default improve the company level performance, and that there would always be some kind of meaningful link between performance and the organization's goal. But as we know, this is elusive. So I was thinking, what's a good analogy here? And a lot of organizations work in silos, and employees rarely know the financial or the marketing standing of an organization. We talked about that last week. And as we learned in episode 196, transparency is something that's applauded by researchers and experts in the field. And they even say, we talked about this too, look, companies should encourage employees to look up the market standings, the financial aspects of the company, and even share resources with them. So I was thinking, what if we think of an organization as an NFL team? Because now we're going back to that thing, Tom, where you said it's performance review time. It's once a year. It's usually isolated and it's not integrated. However, what if each department in an NFL team is working on early season or even last year's goals and are not keeping up with the team's real-time standings? Like, think about, they're not performing performance management in real time. Football teams are constantly, they're changing based on, I mean, real time, like even during the game, right? What happens with the play? QBs call audibles all the time, whether or not they have home field advantage, what are potential standings in relation to playoffs? All that information is constantly communicated throughout all aspects of a football organization, but all is that type of information regularly communicated to all silos and aspects of a, your standard company. So each game brings a different playbook. So shouldn't each day or at least each month, not just each year? And what if organizations thought about it this way? So we talk about the pulse of the organization. If that's known in real time on a day-to-day or even monthly basis with employees, where everyone knows new competitors, again, you can make your parallels here with football, new competitors, market trends, standings, and their performance and the performance of others in that company, we're talking about valid focal points of really what is that continuous and integrated performance management program. So that's my analogy, Tom, and I'm going to turn it over to you.
Well, I like your analogy. I sometimes feel like the punter, you know, just sort of stands at the end of the sideline, and every once in a while they go, oh yeah, we need a punter. But most of the time, as an employee, I get told what I need to know. And, you know, I can't say it really makes me feel part of the organization even at times. So I like the idea of everyone rowing in the same direction, that, you know, organizations need to move to this new paradigm of employees really buying in and being part of the entire organization. Where today, you know, it's, well, we don't want to tell our employees too much, and we don't really want them to feel part of the team because we might decide to get rid of them next week. So, you know, and we've often talked about, you know, another reason it's great Paul's here is, you know, talking about that training of managers and mid-level management, because we've often talked about the fact that people get promoted into positions of leadership because of their skill base. They're doing a great job, but they may not have the communication skills or the leadership skills to actually do a good job in leadership. And, you know, once again, that notion of most of those people in those situations are, you know, or see themselves as managers. They are moving pieces on a chessboard, and they think of leadership as something that, you know, that's above them. But, you know, even you and I have talked, you know, often about leadership from below. I've tried that in a few organizations. Doesn't seem to work too well. But once again, it depends on that level of management and how much training they have. And we don't really seem to be training those people.
Yes. And that's where, when you look at, because you're going to do a needs assessment, because you have to understand what are the training requirements. You've got knowledge and skill gaps. What are the performance problems, the development needs of the individual, and then the organization's goals that are going to require alignment. I put up there on the screen share for a second, Paul Falcone's book. And I wonder, Paul, if you wanted to speak to, as I put it back up, from what Tom was talking about, I have these two highlighted parts. One is about writing meaningful goals and work plans, which is your employees know best, which I'm a firm believer in. Talking to employees, getting it and seeing from their perspective. And then chapter 7 here, creating links between business strategy and organizational performance. I didn't know, Paul, if you wanted to target any of these concepts, and I'll try to follow along in the back end as best I can and try to share my screen with the audience for things that you're talking about.
Yeah, I'd love to. I feel very special this morning, you guys. I just want to let you know, I love all this attention. It's great. No, okay. So the scoop, just keeping this easy is, and I think, Tom, you said it best. It's like this feeling of being judged once a year, and the employee hates it, and the manager's in a situation where they feel like, this is uncomfortable for me to give this feedback. A lot of times managers wait to give real-time feedback because the review is coming up in a couple of weeks or months or whatever it happens to be. And it was never meant to be that way. It was around 10 years ago that Adobe Systems said, we're getting rid of performance reviews and we're moving strictly to real-time feedback. And I think that can work, but the reality is in most organizations, they're probably not sophisticated enough to give the real-time feedback as well as they should. And a lot of companies that chucked their performance reviews, the employees came back a couple of years later and said, please, we're not getting any feedback. Can we at least have the review back again? So keeping this stuff simple. When you do a performance review annually, it's obviously not enough time. The pace of business change, Jeremy, to your point, happens so incredibly quickly that if you're not in a daily huddle and you're not figuring out, using the sports metaphor, right, this leadership offense concept of being a football team, you've got to be able to give feedback all the time. But there's a reality that says, well, we don't have that much time to do this stuff. So I get that, but hold that thought for a minute. But then you also have to look at the fact that there is an annual true-up, an annual scorecard. It's important because this idea of what gets managed gets measured, or what gets measured gets managed, however you look at it, is true. And people need to know where they stand. When you look at Gen Y, the millennials, the 45 and under crowd, and Gen Z, the Zoomers, the 25 and under crowd, these are the most studied generational cohorts like in world history. We know everything about them. And survey after survey after survey, one of the top three or top five things that they want is career and professional development. So the idea is, if we can understand that as employers, if we're wise to kind of meet the needs of where these younger gens are, because this is the future of our workforce, you know, how do we give career and professional development? And what does it look like? And it doesn't look like getting reviewed once a year and feeling judged is going to do it. The managers feel bad. To avoid the confrontation, they take the path of least resistance, which is avoidance, and they give a higher grade than the person should have otherwise gotten. It's known as grade inflation. That's one of the biggest problems out there. And my final thought on this, Jeremy, is when you think about what is that rhythm, what is that cadence? I'm like, just look at Wall Street. Wall Street has 10Q quarterly reporting that feeds the 10K annual report. You can make that formal, where this, you know, you're giving real-time feedback day by day, hour by hour, but you're having these snapshots where you can talk about people's career and professional development. Their future lies in their future, not in their past. When you meet for an annual review, you should be spending 80% of your time talking about their goals, their career and professional development, where do they want to go in terms of stretch assignments, how do they want to build their resume, their LinkedIn profile, their annual self-review. That's where the conversation should be. But in a lot of organizations, Tom, to your point, 80%, if not more, is looking backwards, judging them and making them feel like they're being judged on how they did in the past, when there's really nothing they can do about that. You want to focus their future on their future. So the real annual review should capture the touching points that you, the touch points you had throughout the quarters previously, but basically should be focusing on their future. And the final thought, Jeremy, that I'll throw at you guys is this: it's not putting more work on the manager's desks. The first thing they're going to say is, I don't have the time to do this. And my answer is, treat adults like adults. Place the burden for these quarterly meetings, these touch-base meetings, on the employees. They set the time on your calendar. They set the agenda. Your job is to motivate, coach, develop, whatever you want to call it, mentor. But your job is to listen. But put that responsibility where it clearly belongs. You don't have to be their motivator and coach, but you do have to be the one to listen to help them lock their personal and career interests with what they're doing at work to the degree that you can. It's a great formula for attention, especially of top talent.
I do want to ask you, Paul, because a lot of the focus we talk about today are those younger employees, how to provide career development for them. But I'm not a young employee. You know, I hit the big 6-0 last year. And, you know, when it comes to my career development, you know what, I might be with your organization for a few more years, but I'm going to be retiring. Doesn't mean life is over. I want a career after that. So I'd like to learn some of those skills that I'm looking for. And usually the reaction I get is, well, how does that help the company? So do we need to treat everyone the same, or should we be looking at those age demographics? And especially with someone like me, maybe it's development beyond the organization.
Tom, if they're smart, when they see someone like you, they're going to figure, how do we keep this guy to the last minute, right? Right. Okay, but here's the scoop. It's not sameness. It's consistency. That's what we're looking for. What is going to motivate you is different than what motivates someone fresh out of high school or out of college, yep, or out of the military or whatever it happens to be. The manager's job is to set up the space where the employees can motivate themselves, right? I can't motivate you. Motivation is internal, but I can create the right and certain circumstances for people to talk about what's important to them. When you're within 5 or 10 years of retirement, you kind of just want to be left alone, right? I know how to do the job. I don't need all this mumbo jumbo. But if I had a boss who was sitting with me and saying, Paul, what's important to you at this point? And you can say, well, I'm really worried about when I transition into retirement, am I going to have enough to do? Funny thing is that hits a nerve too. That's what employee wellness and well-being is all about. And so what's important to each person at that stage in their career development, again, your job is to listen and coach and turn it back to them and say, Tom, what would make sense for you at this point? Well, maybe if I can get involved in, or I can, and you know what? That's fine. If that's what's important to you, I'm going to listen to what your needs are. That's what the wise manager is going to do in a situation like that. I'm not going to say it has nothing to do with the company. If it has to do with you, it has to do with the company because you are the company. So it would make no sense to me for a manager to sit back and say, but that has no direct benefit on the organization. People want stretch assignments. They want greater organizational exposure. They want a certification or a license. They want all these different things. Not everything is going to have a direct impact. Some of it's going to have an indirect impact. But the rule holds, happy cows make more milk, right? The best second graders, the second graders do their best work for the teacher they love the most. That's a simple prism. Just look at it like, how can I pay it forward? How can I be someone's favorite boss? And that reality is you'll have highly engaged employees who appreciate you and appreciate the company because You're not putting any more time on your calendar. You're just listening to what their needs are, and you're helping them come to their own solution, which is what coaching is all about. So it works. It's a great question. Thank you.
You're very welcome. We're already off to a great start. Love that response. Jeremy, let's go to you. Jeremy, you were frozen. You're unfrozen now.
I'm unfrozen? Okay, yeah. Good. So I have to do a, first off, I really like, I like what Paul said about it's these things that just make so much sense, but they have to be said out loud. Focus people's future on their future. I love that. And also, Tom, we've said before, a lot of supervisors, a lot of managers might not realize that they are often the topic of conversation at the dinner table of their employees most every night. And what Paul said is, what can I do to be someone's favorite boss? These are just absolute golden nuggets and tidbits. I do want to mention, I'm going to do a screen share because I have a couple questions for Paul. So first, Tom, we look at an audience. We look at so many articles and so much research. And I said earlier today that we were talking about, I said, some suggest that you should have open book management practices. And here I'm looking through Paul's book, The Performance Appraisal Toolkit, and I realized this is where we took it from. So here I am, you know, referencing something, and it just happens to be the person that we're speaking to today. I just didn't put two and two together. But what I want to ask you, Paul, and I do have a follow-up question, so I'm going to steal a second question for you after this. But in your book, you have different things that can be done because, as you said, make their future, and there's different things, practical tools. And I'm going to guess that since you wrote this book, other things have come to mind, but how can these be integrated to making someone's future their future and focus on what's really important to them? So for example, here, as many of you can see, quarterly achievement calendars, of course, the open book management practices. I love this one, intermittent rotational assignments to help people broaden their knowledge about their own career interest, gain a more comprehensive perspective. And I think, Paul, this is elsewhere in your book, but you have, when people are moving within a company, some people aren't moving into a same role within the company. Some people might start out as a staff member, and then they want to be in HR, or they want to be in finance. So there's different ways that people want to advance in the organization. And also people want to advance outside an organization, maybe staff member company A, but finance company B, or et cetera. So there's different ways that people want to advance. So intermittent rotational assignments, I really love. And then also you have here external training workshops, book of the quarter club. I've run many, many book clubs. They are absolutely for the workplace, and they are absolutely fantastic. I incorporated them it was a nine week leadership program for new supervisors or people who are new supervisors to this particular company. And the book club, I would have people come and lead the book club that were, you know, GMs and execs, line level employees, really getting everyone involved and getting everyone a chance. It's a really good way to network and to also talk in a little bit of a less formal situation. Another example here that Paul has, rotational staff meeting leadership, profiling model employees, and et cetera. So Paul, if I can even remember the question that I asked you, how can these help make someone's future their future? And are there any other things that you have thought of since you published this book?
Yeah, it's interesting, Jeremy. We make things harder than they have to be, I swear. This is like, having done human resources at good companies, I've worked in entertainment, I've worked in healthcare, I've worked in financial services. Big, small, startup, Fortune 500, people are people, right? People want career and professional development. They want to be respected. They want to be trusted. They want to be listened to. Doing exit interviews in human resources for decades, the one thing corporate America is not good at is listening, because they say it all the time. My boss doesn't listen to me, and or you can work your fanny off in this company and do a great job. You'll never hear a word, make one mistake, they're all over you. And it's this concept of managing by mistake that a lot of managers kind of fall into that trap. Here's the wisdom for me, as far as I'm concerned. We've lost the ability as a society to sit around the campfire and pass wisdom from the elders to the younger generation. we need to be able to calm the room, quiet things down a little bit, and talk about this stuff. And that's what staff meetings are for. And that's what one-on-one weekly meetings with your direct reports are for. And that's whether you do monthlies or quarterlies or whatever you do, take that time to get them on the same page. There's an article I'd written. There was an article for SHRM, the Society for Human Resources Management, called Values-Based Leadership. And I learned this from the general manager of Nickelodeon at the time, his best boss I ever had. And Mark used to sit with the new teams. Every other week, we'd have new hire orientation. And he would talk to them about his big eight values. And he'd say, you guys, look, you got a handbook, you got a policy and procedure manual, you got a collective bargaining agreement, you've got a code of conduct. I'm telling you, what's on this one sheet with my eight rules is more important than everything else you're going to see out there, because this will keep you focused and this will keep you on the right path. And then he'd go through his eight. And this first one would be, for example, always have one another's back and bring out the best in one another that you possibly can. Okay. And he'd talk about the concept for a few minutes and what does it look like? But he would say, look, we have a very special culture here at Nickelodeon at the animation studio. And I just want to make sure that you all realize that you're responsible for perpetuating it, just like I am. But we're all part of the same family. And we've got to make sure that we're creating that kind of environment for everyone around us, particularly the least or the most vulnerable, I would say, the ones who can't seem to stick up for themselves. When you can share that kind of knowledge, wisdom, whatever you want to call it, with your team, you get a collective exhale. They're like, ah, I like that. He's living his values. I like that value too. And then he'd say, if you have any of your own values that you care to share, love to hear about it. And you know, this is just transparent. It's respectful. And we had very, very little drama at the animation studio back in the day because everyone knew where they belonged. They knew where they fit. These are the kinds of things that make a difference. One other thing, Jeremy, real quick. I always say live the bullet, not the comma. Okay, I want bullets on your resume. I want you thinking in terms of an achievement mindset. What are you doing to save time, increase revenue, save expense, roll out new policies, programs, increase customer satisfaction? Think in terms of making a solid difference. Don't come back to me and say, Paul, I do phones, comma, filing, comma, correspondence, comma. I'm not interested in that. That's your job description. That's the base level, can you fog a mirror? I want to know, why is it a better company for your having done that? And that's how I want them thinking, which was the point of that quarterly achievement calendar. It's just that for me, I just used a simple spreadsheet on a share drive so everyone can update everyone else on the projects they're working at. And most importantly, we can celebrate. When that project is complete, it turns yellow. So we now have a firm notch that everyone can hold on to and say, this is something we did this year or this quarter, and we can celebrate it as a team. So that stuff is really important.
Thank you for that. And I see a lot of eager hands up. So this will be I'll keep this to my last question for now. So back to the comment of making it their responsibility, treating people like adults, which we all love here, and making it their up to them, put it on my calendar, you're taking charge of your career. Would you consider that, and Rich, yes, in the chat, that is the book, it's 100 that you shared. It's 101 Tough Conversations to Have with Employees, A Manager's Guide to Addressing Performance, Conduct, and Discipline Challenges. In general, though, that seems like it'd be a challenging conversation to have with an employee, especially maybe in an organization environment where that climate is not really one of, hey, you're able to take charge of your career. We do have open discussions. How might a manager who is, you know, really good at heart, wants to be a good manager, but maybe doesn't have the skills yet, how might they have that conversation with an employee to let them know that they are the other adult in the room?
Easy enough. Put yourself on the receiving end of the message. You be the average bear. If your boss said that to you, how would it make you feel? The whole point of that 101 Tough Conversations book, Jeremy, was to come from a coaching standpoint. There's no judgment. I'm not pointing my moral finger at anyone saying, you did this wrong. You did. It's not that. It's a matter of, you can sit with someone who is a top producer, sales branch, you know, leader for the last 10 years, but they're a toxic personality. They're hard to get along with. People avoid them at all costs. It's like their performance is stellar, but their behavior is horrible. But you have to hold them responsible for both the performance and the conduct, right? So to sit with them and say, look, Jeremy, the most important decisions in your career are going to be made when you're not in the room. That's the same for you as it is for me, as it is for everybody else on this planet. There's something that may be missing awareness that could potentially hold you back over the long term. And I'd like to talk that with you now, because if I can help you become as strong on the behavior side as you are on the performance side, your career goes nowhere but up. But truthfully, if people construct their sentences about you as a Jeremy but as opposed to a Jeremy and, it's going to be a problem. Here's what it sounds like. Oh, yeah, I know Jeremy. He's been the top producer here for 1,000 years. And he's wonderful. Reach out to him whenever you need anything. He will make himself available. Or are they saying, oh, yeah, I know Jeremy. He's been here for 100,000 years. He's the top producer, but be careful. I cut a wide swath around him because you never know what's going to set him off. I said, that's the challenge that you've got right now. It's a perception problem. I'm not saying it's even reality, but I've got to hold you accountable for your own perception management, just like I hold myself and everyone else on the team. So let's talk about it a little bit. And then you can go into this conversation with them. And once they realize this is in their best interest, long-term career development, they're going to walk away 20 years from now. They're going to run into you in the mall and they're going to say, my God, Paul Falcone, if it wasn't for you, you were the only one who called me out on that. I knew I was behaving badly, but thank you for that. It changed the whole trajectory of my career. That's why we're doing this. I always say leadership is the greatest gift the workplace offers because it allows you to touch people's lives and change their careers. It's beautiful stuff. Even if you don't necessarily have the money to give them an immediate promotion or to, you know, do it, that's not the point. It's the psychic income. It's the stuff that makes them realize, I love working for this guy and I'm not leaving someplace. I'm not leaving for 20% to go elsewhere when I may get someone who either doesn't care about my career, doesn't care about me, or throws chairs and spits fire. It's not worth it. I'm going to stay put. And that's why great managers make the retention stick.
Thank you very much for that. Linda Ann, let's go to you.
Thank you so much for being here today, Paul. These are wonderful conversations and you speak to my heart on a lot of things. And I've often said that, you know, if an employee doesn't see their future with your organization, they see it somewhere else, right? And to really, when you open the door for that conversation, that what's the dream for your career, with that career planning and take them through that process, my experience has been that what is uncovered is amazing, right? And when they can really see how they contribute, if you've clearly identified those strategic goals and the values by which you want to achieve them and how that can be applied, they will take you to amazing places. And often when you have those conversations, things that they want to do and achieve fit so cleanly into where you want that company to go. And it's just a matter of matching what their dreams are to what the organization wants to achieve long term. And so if you take the time to have those conversations, they really take a lot off of the leader's plate, more than they would ever typically give. And it's a wonderful exchange to see someone blossom and how you could, all you have to do is help them out and they take you to amazing heights.
Linda, and I totally agree. The word I use is thrive, but blossom is the same thing. And the funny thing is when you've got your team in alignment, I'm blessed. I'm fortunate. I'd had very little turnover on my teams in my career. But when there was turnover, typically they were leaving for good reason. I had a manager who I couldn't promote, but they got a director job elsewhere. That is something worth celebrating. They couldn't have gotten that director level job had they not worked, you know, in our shop as a manager. So that's something worth celebrating. That's a party. Now, if I have someone who's an analyst who leaves my company to go elsewhere to be an analyst, that's regrettable turnover. Now I'm thinking, what did I do wrong? Because they're changing hats for the sake of change sake, right? They shouldn't be leaving. And I don't care about a 20% raise. I'm talking about in terms of responsibilities. They're not taking anything else on. So I've got to meet with them and find out what I missed. And I also have to do some career introspection to figure out what I lost with this person and where the connection didn't happen. This isn't pie in the sky, you guys. It isn't. This is real life stuff. I've worked in hospitals. I've worked on movie sets. I've worked in banks. It's like people are people. I know what kind of boss I wanted to have. And sometimes having a bad boss is important too, because they help you determine who you're not, right? They set that goalpost for you. But at the same time, I wanted to be someone that people could say, when I run into them in the mall 20 years from now, they're going to say, thank goodness, Paul, that you were there as my boss. And that happened to me exactly. Someone who was on my team at Nickelodeon, which was my manager, is now the senior VP of human resources at DreamWorks Animation. And it's like, wow, to think that I had some level of influence on her career to get her to that point. is a wonderful feeling. And that's what we're doing this all for. I know we do it for a paycheck and we do it for benefits, but the reality is when you realize there's so much you can do just by changing your sponsoring thought about who you are and who you choose to be as a leader. And to your point, Lindanne, when you make the space for them, when you make the time to motivate themselves, wow, you're relevant. No one's ever going to leave my shop saying this company only cares about the company and not about me. They don't care about my career and professional development. I mean, I'm putting them in that space. I'm giving them the ideas. I'm sharing with them articles. I love it. To me, that's the most exciting thing about the work that I've always done. So it's benefited me and the places where I've worked. And it's something worth sharing, which is how it turns into books and articles. So thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it.
I have a quick question. What I find is that the hardest thing to do, and I think the one that the step that's most skipped, is when you have the goals or expectations, whatever you want to term that, of the team identified, right? You have these understandings of where people want to go. The piece that's missed is really the leadership linking that to the organizational goals. I feel that that's where a lot of this ball gets dropped and where silos develop and things like that. Is that something that you have a challenge with as well?
Yeah, it's a good question. So Harvard Business Review, if you read the book on performance management, they talk about a concept called job sculpting. And I never heard the term before, but I thought, oh, this makes sense. So job sculpting means finding out what your people are passionate about and finding ways to bring that into the workplace. So for example, for me, I fit a profile that says, I like to mentor, I like to coach, I like to train, I'm interested in other people's success. You could link that to, well, that's great. So Paul can become an onboarding buddy for new hires. He can be a community ambassador for anything the company wants to do in terms of making the world a better place. There's different things that you can do for the Paul Falcone who's interested in that. Some people are interested in more analytical type of work. There's different kinds of, I think they came up with 8 profiles in there. But those are ways that you can link what their personal interests are to having an immediate impact on the organization. What I'd also say though, Lindanne, is not everyone at that stage of their lives is necessarily going to be thinking organization first. They're going to be thinking me first for whatever reason. And that's okay too. People need to grow and develop. If Tom was coming to me and saying, Paul, I love all you're doing, but just leave me alone. I just want to do my job. It would make me smile. And I'd say, well, no, you're not off the hook quite so quickly, young man, but let's stay with that. Let's talk about some of the things that are of interest to you that you think can benefit other people in the company. Because you're probably not the only person who's going through this little challenge right now, or at least preparing for it. So all of a sudden, you've got someone who's now becoming this community ambassador for people who may be thinking about next 5 to 10 years, we'll be retiring. And what should we prepare for? Maybe that becomes an employee resource group. I don't know. The cool thing about this is you don't know which way it's going to go. You just need to kind of feed that pipeline and feed that energy and let the employees determine where it's going to go. And that's how you become, again, a favorite boss. Nickelodeon, we had one of the best internships. It was Forbes, I think, or one of the top 10 internship programs in the country. That was not my idea. That was Ashley's idea. And Ashley was the one who went on to become the senior VP at DreamWorks. But you understand the concept. It's like it was Ashley's baby to run with. I just needed to make the space for her to do so. But I ended up getting the kudos for it, right? Because it's like, wow, at Nickelodeon, while Paul was the CHRO, baloney. That wasn't me. That was Ashley. I need to make sure that everybody knows that that was Ashley because that was her baby. So it's good.
I want to come work for you, Paul.
Right with you there, Tom. Don't worry. I'll come to work for you too. I'm 60 myself, so I totally know where you're coming from. It's good. It's good stuff.
Thank you. And Lee, let's go to you.
You know, this has been great. And, you know, I have to say, Paul, I just started your book, the framework. And there aren't a whole lot of books that as I'm reading, I'm kind of nodding along. I mean, it's what I've read so far. It's like you've taken the 30 years of my life, you know, back of all the lessons from all the people and kind of distilled it down. And I'm just like, wow, man, this guy's got it. And, you know, and so much I totally get with the, you know, I've had some great examples and I've had great examples of bad examples when it comes to, right, to leaders. And, you know, I do a lot of the things that you're doing already, and I'm looking forward to finding those things that I'm not doing yet. Because I'm sure that there's things I can do. Because making this about the team, you know, I don't need a cult of personality. It doesn't need to be about me. it needs to be about them. I mean, I may be pushing the rudder, but they got to be rowing in the right direction or we're never going to get anywhere. And absolutely love all that. And we try to do that. You know, my organization doesn't require continual feedback. We do it quarterly, but I require continual feedback for both. I want to know what they think about what I'm doing, which is not always comfortable, but it, you know, I'm never going to grow otherwise. And I love what you said, because I love to sit down with them and go, what do you want to do in the future? Not for the company, but for you. What do you want to do? And maybe it's professional. Maybe it'll help you in this job. Maybe it's a step down the road to another job. You know, in my current team, the only people who have left have gone on to better things, you know, and I totally agree with what you said that, you know, if they're going to something better, it's a celebration. It's a party. I can't be mad. It sucks for me. The team, yeah, we'll get by, but you know, that's great for you. And the people have been taken aback. You know, I can't believe that you're I'm like, are you kidding? I'm happy for you. You know, what it sucks for is me, not you. So, because now I got to find somebody who replace you. And you know, and I love to tell them, you know, you guys aren't replaceable. I may be able to put somebody in your seat. I may be able to give somebody your title, but I can never replace you. You are, you're not just a cog, you know, and I want people to feel and understand that they are seen as an individual. They are seen as a contributor and a member of the team. And what they do is important. It doesn't matter if they count paper clips or if they're designing, you know, the next space shuttle. Every piece is important in the, you know, you know, it's funny when you get, you know, a ship or a machine or something and that one little cotter pin falls out and then all of a sudden everything goes to pot. Every piece is important. And I want to make sure that every member on my team understands, no matter what their role is, that they are important and that we care about what they're going to do next, because they're all capable of doing great things. Sometimes they just have to be shown that.
Yeah, Lee, I totally agree. And thank you for the kind words about the book. That's very nice. You guys, again, when it comes to sitting around the campfire, what I've told my teams is the same thing I've told my kids. I want for you what you want for you. Not, I want for you what I want for me through you. There's a big difference. And people can sense it. They know when you're being sincere. They know when you're being honest. And they know when you're just all about you. And managers tend to tell themselves these narratives. And you're like, oh, I can't recognize employees publicly. I don't want to do that, Paul. Why not? Well, it's going to go to their head. They're going to want more money. I'm like, wait a second. If I called you out in front of the whole team right now and I said, great job. I can't believe you caught that. I'm so impressed. Do tell. Teach us how you did that, because we want to learn. How'd you save that account? The first thing you're going to be thinking about is you want a 10% raise. Well, no. I mean, I right. So don't tell yourself those narratives. Don't let that stuff get, you know, people, you know, I need to be feared to be an effective. No, you don't. No, you don't. If you want to go through life being, making everyone afraid of you, I'm not saying you won't be effective in your career and you may make a lot of money. Lord knows there are a lot of CEOs and companies that's kind of their profile. But I've seen company CEOs and presidents and everything who are kind-hearted, who are selfless leaders. And those are the ones that everyone will jump in front of a speeding train to save. And that's what you want. That's what the discretionary effort is. That's when you talk about respect and you talk about, you know, this just element of trust. There's a really good TED Talk, everybody. It's on the importance of vulnerability. And it's a top 10 TED Talk by Brené Brown, who's a professor at the University of Austin. If you haven't seen that one, watch that one, because it talks about how you make yourself vulnerable as a leader. It's hard. It's not easy. But the bottom line is vulnerability begets trust. And if to the degree that you feel comfortable making yourself vulnerable in a healthy sense, your employees are going to be able to do the same thing. You're going to get them away from that body language, which is always protecting themselves, to more of an open stance where they can tell you how they feel. And even using the word feel, let me share with you what this feels like from my vantage point. No one's going to look at you and say, you don't have the right to feel that way. But what they don't want is to say, you know, Paul, you always do this. You never do that. That's not true. That's an exaggeration, and get away from adverbs. You don't need the LY words. You purposely, deliberately, intentionally, that's making people feel judged. No one wants to feel judged, but you do have the right to observe. And that's a difference. And you can talk to them about my observation. This is not a judgment. This is just how I see it. But I want to talk to you because maybe I'm missing something, but share with me what your side of the story is. Even when going down the path of progressive discipline, because I've written a book on 101 sample write-ups for documenting employee performance problems, talk with the employee first. Don't just hand them a written warning and say, like, you've been given a ticket for speeding. There you go. You're wrong. There's two sides to every story. It's not black and white when you're dealing with people. You need to be in the gray. You need to at least be hearing their side of the story. And then when you can tell them, I understand and I appreciate you sharing that, bottom line is we need to move in this direction, at least they'll feel like they were heard. And again, that's an element of respect. They may not like the answer, but they can heal from that. They can deal with that. And that's important.
Thank you very much for that, Paul. Dr. Matthew, let's go to you.
Thank you, Paul, for being here. And the conversation has just been incredible. I know I've gotten a lot of value, and I'm sure others have as well. Hopefully our listeners too. So it got me thinking about when I first got into management, when I made that leap from producer to manager, I was really unsure about what this performance review at the end of the year, what, you know, delivering this annual appraisal, what this is going to look like. Oh my gosh, this is going to be a big task. And I had started in that role earlier in the calendar year. So I knew that it was going to be on me. I also thought back to some of the performance reviews that I had been on the other end of the table, and the ones that went really well, I tried to think, okay, what did I like about that? And the ones that didn't, what do I want to avoid? One of those things that I wanted to avoid was the compliment sandwich. You know, here's what you did well. Here's what you need to work on. Here's what you did well. Because you could see that coming from a mile away. And what ends up happening, or at least what happened for me, I didn't pay attention to the first compliment because I'm going, when's the other shoe going to fall? Right. And once I get the here's where you need to improve, I forget to listen to the other compliment at the end because I'm going, well, okay, how can I fix it? So it didn't deliver a development or a path forward. It was very much, it didn't have the landing or the effect that it may have intended. So when I got into that role as a manager, we had a couple books that were given to us. They may have actually even been your books. But I turned to a former manager and who's now a colleague. And I had said, hey, what do I need to do ahead of this to get, you know, you were always somebody who could give really good performance reviews. You were a really good coach and a manager and a leader. What can I do? And so I took that campfire approach, as you just called it. And I sat there and I listened and I said, what can I do? And some of their feedback was take notes throughout the year, keep the conversations going throughout the year so that performance review at the end or any disciplinary conversation throughout the year, it's not a surprise. They know what's going on because you've been talking about it every check-in, whether that's monthly, weekly, quarterly, whatever your cadence is that you've set with them, they're aware of it. So when you get to that end of the year review and the company says, great, we need to do an annual appraisal, piece of cake, let me pull out that file and just kind of do a summary on what we've talked about. And it's going to be filled with so much more than here's what everything that happened. And it's actually going to be focused on here's what can happen. Here's where we're going. We've talked about this was an opportunity for improvement, and here's how you've already improved that going forward. And it landed with the employees. It landed with me as the manager. I was able to go into those conversations. I know what I'm talking about, and I feel comfortable with this because we've been doing that. We've been talking about it all year. It's not a surprise to me. It's not a surprise to you. And really, we can focus on how do we keep it going? And it comes back to, yeah, treating people like people. And in those conversations, what can I do to motivate or encourage you? What's meaningful to you? What enhances your experience here at work? Because when you show up and you're happy, you're more engaged, you're more productive, you're just all around enjoying it. So what can I do to be that support? And what does your career path look like? Because it's yours, not mine. So if your career path says, you know what, I'm in my ideal position. I don't want to move up. I don't want to advance to the next level. Cool. Great. How can I help support you in that role to be so that you can be the best version of yourself that you choose to be? And new managers can learn those skills and learn those behaviors, and existing managers and leaders can develop those skills. Jeremy talked earlier about not every organization has that culture. So how do we build those cultures? How do we share the whys to the organizations to say, here's why you want to foster that, develop that culture? And, you know, we talk about it. We share these ideas and we share that knowledge and we find opportunities to build more of those campfires that you talked about.
Yeah, Matthew, you said it beautifully. I couldn't have said it better. I totally agree 100% with everything you just said. The one thing I'll say, you guys, is this. You create your own ecosystem. I don't care what's going on above me, who's shooting arrows at whom, what bombs are exploding. I want my people to experience my brand of leadership, period. I have worked in organizations where the leadership was totally in harmony all across the food chain from up to down. I've worked in organizations that were so dysfunctional, it was like, you've got to be kidding. But the bottom line is, I didn't let the influence of what was going on above me, good or bad, really make any excuses for the ecosystem that I was creating on Paul Falcone's team. I wanted people to say, I don't know what Falcone's doing in that department, but everyone seems to be happy all the time. They come up with great ideas, blah, 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 blah. They're not like any HR department we've ever had before. It ain't rocket science. It's just unleashing that potential. And again, Matthew, to your point, think about what's the new paradigm these days? It's hybrid work, right? We went from 100% remote during the pandemic to now most organizations are back in the office 2 to 3 days. But hybrid work is a lot trickier because it has to be more intentional by design. You don't run into people in the break room anymore and say, hey, what's going on? How's everything? You don't do that. So you've got to build that time into your calendar. And in doing so still makes managers bristle. And I get it. It's tough. Managers are independent individual contributors. They're managers. They're all these different things. And it's like, please add one more responsibility to my plate. Why not? But again, make it easier on yourselves, you guys. Matthew, the whole point you're bringing up is if you're having these intervals, if you're giving real-time feedback, for example, and you're having these quarterly meetings where the employees are talking about how they're doing in terms of their performance, how they're moving towards their goals, how I can help them get what they want. Your annual review is a yawn. There's nothing to it. You're just capturing what you've talked about historically and then focusing more on the future. That's where it should be. That's what this was meant to be and designed to be all along. And we've got it wrong. Well, I shouldn't even say it wasn't designed that way. When they first started performance appraisals, it was during World War I in this country. And in World War I, they started this formal appraisal system in the U.S. military to deselect people from the military, right? You were not qualified, therefore you were out. The funny thing is, whatever that route was, it's still part of it today. Still, people feel like performance review has a negative effect. The wise employer, the one creating their own ecosystem, is going to make it a net positive, right? It's about feedback. It's about respect. It's about trust. It's about me helping you. It's about me paying it forward and helping you get to that next step in your career progression, whatever it is, which could mean staying happy where you are right now. It could mean moving up through the ranks. I want you to be successful here or elsewhere. And I tell that to people. I'm not trying to hog you to this company. I will help you get where you want to go in your career. In Ashley's case, she did need to move on. But you know what? She moved on for a wonderful opportunity. And my gosh, look where she is now. I mean, this is fabulous stuff. So again, I say it very humbly, but I grew up in New York in the 1970s in Brooklyn. I mean, I don't come from a rose-colored glasses background, dealing with MD PhDs in a hospital setting, dealing with producers and directors in a Hollywood setting. These are not the kindest human beings always on the planet. What I'm telling you is this still works even under the most adverse conditions because people love and trust you. And as long as you're their boss, they ain't going anywhere for 20%. Not if it means they've got to go somewhere else and risk losing someone who's so invested in them. So thanks, Matthew. Great insight.
Thank you very much as well. Let's go to Nick.
Yeah, it's a fantastic conversation, and I appreciate the expertise. You said a couple of things that really jumped out at me. Not saying this, but consistency. I think that's kind of, you know, the industrial organizational psychology answer is it depends. And that's, you know, kind of exactly what you're getting to the heart of with that. The idea that the performance review should be forward-looking, and we've got this root of you're trying to cut people out to get the best. I think that's, you know, one of those ideas that's really hard to root out because it is so effective. If you're looking for top talent, you want to cut away the dead weight. And I think that idea is so ingrained that it's hard for this shift and the change that's coming with, you know, better tools, more working styles and things like that. There's a lot of things that have worked really well that may or may not continue to work as we go forward. And we talk about the idea of this generational transfer that's coming, you know, sitting around the fireplace and getting more mentoring, you know, and both sides need to come to that campfire with humility. But how do you have those conversations where, yes, let's keep what works, let's integrate what will work, and let's cut out what isn't working, what's causing burnout, what's causing stress. And I think you said a phrase that really always kind of resonates with me, that psychic income, those second, third order. If you put this good system in place, you're not measuring dollars anymore. You're measuring well-being. And how do you convey that value to those above you and things like that?
Yeah, Nick, great insights. Thank you for it. It's fine. It depends. It made me smile when you said that. Those are the two most important words in my world. Because every time when I go through management training and I do these things and I say, okay, someone's sleeping on the job, What's the company response? And I teach at UCLA Extension School of Business and Management. And this kid's raising, well, my company get fired for that. Next student, well, my company, we just kind of wake them up. And somewhere in between. And the answer is, well, it depends on the circumstances. It's not just a matter of the sleeping. If it's a staff accountant who falls asleep, in many companies, they'd probably give a written warning. It's if it's an ICU nurse on the night shift who's monitoring patient controls and they fell asleep at the desk, that's probably a final written warning. And if it's an anesthesiologist who falls asleep during the surgery, they're terminated for the first offense. So you can't look at it as sameness. It's not a steamroller. If that were the case, you wouldn't be dealing with human beings. You'd be dealing with widgets. But you have to teach your managers, which is why every time I went into a new company, the first thing I did was management training, because I wanted them to see things the way I saw things. Don't come to me with someone who's got perfect performance reviews, no progressive discipline, and tell me some proverbial straw is broken on the camel's back and you now want the person fired. I mean, shy of some egregious misconduct like theft or embezzlement or forgery or fraud, I can't do a summary termination. You've got to go through steps. So they needed to understand that so that I didn't become the bad guy. I didn't want them saying, well, HR never lets me fire anyone. It's like, well, you're not doing this the right way. You're not giving me anything to work with. So raising that level of awareness among the managers becomes really critical. And as a leader myself, I would get ahead of that parade rather than be on the receiving end of it each time fighting those uphill battles. So thank you, Nick. I think great insight, very well put. I appreciate it.
I think I'm going to get a t-shirt that says, I am not a widget. might be popular.
That'll do Alexander. It, Tom. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Alexander, let's go to you.
Thank you. Mr. Falcone, thank you so much for coming today to talk with us. I just want to say that first and foremost. I work with CIOs quite a bit on consulting, and because of the technology changes that are happening so rapidly, a lot of them I'm hearing now say they don't know if they want to be a CIO anymore. They're looking at career changes. But also within our IT teams, especially within system administrators, we see a lot of key people that are wanting to move outside of those roles as well. With those kind of challenges, what advice would you give to CIOs and people within kind of system administrator roles to be able to help their careers?
Alexander, the changes are coming so incredibly quickly, especially in the tech space. You can see where people can burn out very quickly. There's an app for that. Seems to be an answer to everything these days. And I can see where people will sit back and say, I'm exhausted. I'm just too tired and I just don't have it in me anymore. I just don't have the fight. As a coach, when people really feel that way, they do have to do that deep level career introspection and figure out, A, do you want to continue? Life is too short. If COVID taught us anything, we better at least figure this stuff out. And B, do you have an alternative plan? Really quickly, for me, after doing 35 years of HR, in 2022, I decided, you know what? Life is too short. I want to do just the stuff that I love doing and that I'm most passionate about. So I started my own consulting firm, and I mostly do management training and keynote speaking and executive coaching. Not rocket science. This is the stuff that I love. This is where I want to spend however long I want to do this. And it was my wife who said, honey, I know you. You're going to want to work till you're 90. So she said, you know, I was 59 at the time. She said, spend the next 7 or 8 years where you would have been in corporate building your consulting practice. And I married up Alexander, obviously, and she had great advice and I followed it. And I'm very glad that I have. But the bottom line is when the pace of change outstrips people's ability to deal with it, it starts to affect their wellness and their well-being. And in good conscience as a coach, I'm not going to tell someone stick with it just for the sake of sticking with it. They really have to do that deep level analysis and figure out where they're going to be happy and whether they want to keep fighting this fight, because it is an exhaustive fight. I think the pace of change has never been stronger than it is right now. As we're in this fourth industrial revolution, which apparently started in 2016 from the research that I did, with everything moving in a whole new direction in terms of what technology can do for us, there will be some people who say, you know what, this isn't fun. I don't want to do this anymore. And I think in good conscience, I'm going to support that decision, even though the client of mine wouldn't like it, either if I were the coach or I was a CHRO. No one wants to know that your CHRO is confirming that people should leave. But you've got to put the people first, because if you try and snow them by putting the company first and putting their needs second, it's not authentic. It's not real. They're going to see through it. And that's just bad. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't see myself doing it. They've got to know that they can trust you. And that trust sometimes means saying things that are better for them that may not be the best thing for the organization. I don't, does that answer your question, Alexander? Is that a fair, did I capture it or did I miss anything?
No, I think you answered it brilliantly. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. That was great. I appreciate it.
And with that, Jeremy, an hour has flown by. And there were more people, you know, who wanted to ask Paul questions, but unfortunately, we have run out of time. So let's go back to you for a wrap, and you can give us a little preview about next week.
Sure. And Paul, I can see how you mentioned that profile from a Harvard Business Review about the type of where your passion lies. And I can see where yours lies in mentoring and coaching. I think this is an episode that people will put on their replay list for asynchronous mentoring, because it's the way it's delivered and the deep, deep insights over so much research, so much thinking, and so much experience. I think it's one of those listened to often, as will be the other times that you join us. Tonight at 6:30, we've got Lee Crosston's IO Psychology Virtual Mixer. We have a Saturday in-person meetup in Salt Lake City this Saturday. I do want to mention, I think Gabby's still with us in the audience. So we had our first IO student meetup yesterday, and Dr. Ben Wood from Vanguard University joined, and it was absolutely fantastic. Tips and tricks, helping people get set up for not only how to navigate their current degree program, but also set themselves up for success in their dream career in the field. And we'll be continuing those every 2 weeks. We also have upcoming job seeker meetups, of course, and all this is on cboc.com/events. Members Momentum Session, we have a Northeast virtual meetup coming on the 26th. We have AI Essentials for IO Psychologists, which is on March 27th for our Keeping the Drive Alive monthly post 3-day event gathering. Why are we stuck with long titles, Tom? We always have such long titles. And then next week, excited about this, Paul will be joining us again for the topic Center Stage Employee Input and Performance Evaluations. And then lastly, we have on April 10th, we're doing once a month CBOC Expert Member Happy Hours. Tom, that's what I have for upcoming.
Well, here's a new idea for CBOC with a short title, The Paul Falcone Show. I think it would be great to have you here constantly. So thank you very much. And Jeremy, once again, absolute pleasure. And thank you everyone for contributing. As I often say, this is the favorite part of my week. I get to spend an hour with some of the smartest people in the world. So thank you very much. And with that, Jeremy, I think you should probably count us out, and we'll see everyone back here in 1 week's time.
Agree with everything you said, Paul. Tom, counting out in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Work Cookie, a CBOC podcast. Don't forget to sign up at CBOC.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from experts. Would it be a bad idea to make your most challenging workplace problems go away? At CBOC.com.